Welcome to Films Apart, the podcast where we poke fun at buried flops, unearth hidden gems, and explore timeless classics.
So grab yourself some popcorn, sit back, and let's break these films apart.
Welcome. Today's episode is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
An absolute classic, and one a good one to choose for the awards ceremony.
Yes, so you wanted to choose something that had swept up in the Oscars, didn't you?
Well, there's three films that have won the Big Five, which is director, film, actor, actress, and writing, I believe.
I think it's best screenplay.
Yeah.
Adapted screenplay.
And there's been, three films. This is one of them. Silence of the Lambs was the other. Mm-hmm. And the other one is, I think, It Happened One Night, a classic from the 30s or 40s.
We chose this one because we've both seen Silence of the Lambs. I hadn't seen this one before, and I'd been meaning to for quite a long time.
And, ironically, we wanted something a bit light.
As light as of the four could get.
I was reading, I don't know if it was Milos Forman or the director or somebody was saying about that was involved with it, was saying that this film should first and foremost be serious, then it should be entertaining, and third it should be a comedy.
I thought it was a very funny film, but also it was very heartfelt. And
yeah, but you're left with the seriousness of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, do you want to give it a very brief synopsis?
So we have Jack Nicholson's character, who is called McMurphy. They refer to him as most of the film. He's basically been institutionalized because he refuses to work in a prison, which he has been imprisoned for statutory rape of a minor, hasn't
he? Yeah. 15-year-old.
Yeah, so he's basically been faking mental illness to try and get out of doing work in a prison, to live out the rest of his sentence easily, he assumes. Mm.
And it doesn't quite go according to plan.
No.
And basically that's what the story is, essentially. Mm. Isn't it? And it's more about a comment on life on a psychiatric ward and what we do to patients, I guess.
Yeah. Sort of about the institutionalization of caring for people with mental health issues.
And the control that people have.
Yeah, the power that's had over them, and how that can eat away at them and also in some cases actually hold them back from change, I suppose, and overcoming these issues.
Yeah. So it was interesting, wasn't it? Because the character that Jack Nicholson plays is wild, self-important, egotistical, arrogant, cocky. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he treats the people in there with seemingly more respect than the nurse.
Yeah.
And so he actually makes progress in helping some of the people in there inadvertently.
Well, that's the one thing that stood out for me. While I had issues following a protagonist in previous episodes of Once Upon a Time in America because if he was this sort of bastard, egotistical, like, rapist, his character, he was lovable, he was a joker, and like you say, he respected these people, he didn't look down upon them. At no point did he enter and have to learn the lesson that these are like normal people, he viewed them as his equals.
But he was also an egotistical rapist.
Yeah, he was that as well, but...
Is it? Yeah. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, basically the sort of antagonist, I suppose, is Nurse Ratched.
I mean, you can look at it two ways. You could, especially the way the film starts, because to begin with, she's more mild.
Yeah,
mannered.
She's not an antagonist. She's just.
And she could be the protagonist, and he could be the antagonist.
Yeah. He's a disruption to the flow of what seemingly is a very well working machine. Of they have their schedule, they shouldn't break it, it will disturb the patients.
Yeah.
And then we soon find out that isn't the case. It's that she uses the schedule as a form of control, and the patients actually fear her.
Yeah. I thought that the character of Nurse Ratched, played by Louise Fletcher, was firstly very well written, like incredibly subtle.
Yeah.
I was thinking about if you were to read that, would it immediately jump out as this sort of power crazy woman, or would you, because she is very mild mannered at times. I think the performance is the best performance in the whole thing for me, because it's so understated. You can see on her face just those little movements. Mm-hmm. Okay, occasionally you can see when McMurphy gets one up on her,
yeah,
that she's irritated by it. Mm-hmm. But most of the time she's very kind of, it's restrained,
yeah,
but she manages to make it look restrained, mm-hmm, like there is something seething within her. But that's so subtle that you can easily miss it. I've watched it a few times, but watching it this time, that's what I was most wowed by.
Yeah, I think you buy into her genuinely just being this nurse that knows what's better for the patients. It's just that McMurphy's inexperienced in this place. He's treating them as if they're completely self-functioning like people, whereas they sort of, they do depend upon the aid of the nurses.
You're not mad, doesn't it? He goes, you're not mad. You're no madder than anybody out there.
I thought that was a really sweet part, because as well, we're shown throughout the film that they aren't mad. They're just different.
And
that's all.
And they've got issues. Yeah, you know, you've got the one character who presumably has got issues with his sexuality.
Yeah.
You've got the one character who's got issues with his mom.
Yeah, and forms in a sort of stutter and this complete lack of confidence, especially with women.
And then you've got other characters that are that definitely need more help.
Yes, yeah. I can't remember his name. What's the character? There's Danny DeVito's character as well.
Yeah, Martini, is it?
Martini. It took me too long to realise that was Danny DeVito. I've not seen him so young in a film. First scene and a half, I think. I was sat there like, I like this character. And then I saw him around the circle. I was like, it's fucking Danny DeVito. Of course I like him.
It's such a brilliant performance. I think all the performers, down to like the guys that just stand there and don't really interact, are really well drawn and well performed.
Yeah, it's not like it's over the top mental health.
No.
Like instability. It's believable. They're real people, and they feel like it. They don't just feel like a stereotype of what you assume to be like madness, especially in the 70s. There's the other character who's always sticking up and pushing for what's right. I thought that was really nice, but he doesn't have the pull, or
the one who's trying to get his cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a bit of a changing point, because up until then you don't really see why he would have issue in the real world outside of him just being a little bit annoying, and in some cases, and like him possibly being bullied because of that.
And also he's voluntary. He's volunteered to be in there. Like, yeah, several of them volunteered to be on the ward, and his cigarettes are being withheld from him.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting moment, isn't it? There's an empowerment. McMurphy empowers him.
Mm-hmm.
But the outcome of that is
electric shock therapy.
Is horrifying.
Mm. I think that's the turning point in the movie. Because up until then, it is just this fun little rivalry between Ratched and McMurphy. And he's finally feeling like, I've got them to stand up for themselves. And then he's shown why they don't stand up for themselves.
I mean I've had a bit of experience on a psychiatric ward, and I've seen somebody who's come out of electric convulsive therapy, and it's hard to believe that it's something that still goes on, but it still happens, yeah. But not in the way that it was happening in that film, which was as a form of punishment.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to think about the awards, if you don't mind talking about that a little bit.
Yeah, go into it.
So Milos Forman won Best Director, and he's also known for directing Amadeus. He might want an Oscar for that. It was definitely one of those films that won awards. Man on the Moon and Hair, these are the sort of big films that he's known for. I often talk about this with Beck about how do you determine what is a best director? Because sometimes I'll watch a film and I'll go away from it and I'll go, the directing in that film was incredible. Mm-hmm. But it feels a bit intuitive with me. Beck goes, how do you know? What would you... Yeah. And it is, for me, how I would say it is, what in this film, using this film as an example, all of the ensemble perform really well. Now, that isn't necessarily just down to the acting.
Yeah.
That's down to the way it's filmed. That's down to the way it's edited. Mm-hmm. So if all of the performers do a good job, that to me is a sign of good direction.
That's good. If all of these elements have been so seamlessly brought together, that's on the directors to do. So, yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. I have always wondered the same thing about how it is decided. Is it that there's, like, behind-the-scenes footage that are reviewed by the Academy that they watch over to, like, see the sort of work sort of on set of the director? Or is it just, like you say, just a seamless blending of, like, acting, editing, music,
cinematography,
the props and
definitely background.
I
guess it's the one where all decisions seem to be the right decisions.
But then interestingly, with that, why does that differentiate from Best Picture? Why could a film that wins Best Picture, surely a lot of that comes down to the director as well?
Maybe that's more of an interesting question, actually, because it would seem logical that a Best Director and Best Picture would go hand in hand. Yeah. Often they don't.
Okay, reading this quickly, apparently Best Picture goes to the producers.
Yeah, and director, though, isn't it? Yeah, well, I guess also maybe it's to do with an audience, how bringing something to an audience, and that has something to do with the production. Interesting. Maybe somebody out there has got a good definition, a quick definition that could...
What differentiates these two? Maybe the best director's more goes out to the combination of performances, because the director is more involved in getting the performance out of an actor, whereas I suppose cinematography has its own thing, sound design has its own thing, but when all of them things come together, that makes a best picture, but it's performance that just does best director, maybe?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I suspect it is other elements as well, because I think the director has input in everything in one way or another. That's probably with me when I go to see a film and I feel like it's best directed, what my intuition is based around performance, probably more than anything else, personally. This year, I haven't watched The Brutalist yet because it's not out. That's the one that everybody's talking about. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But I've seen a few good films. Wicked got nominated. You've seen Wicked.
Yeah,
got
seen
nominated
Wicked
for Best Picture. What do you reckon?
No. Although I've not seen a lot of the other nominees, but
I mean, let's have a quick look at what the Best Picture nominees are. I watched Anora, which is a smaller film. And an interesting film to be nominated for Best Picture, and I'm really glad it was, because it was really entertaining, as well as being very well written. What stands out for me in that, though, is the writing, I would say, and the performances are good. I wouldn't put it in like a Best Director category. Not it just doesn't stand out in that way. It is intuitive with me, I guess. So we've got a Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan one.
Yeah.
I 100% would not have put that in the category for Best Picture of Oscars this year. And I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't have put it up there. The Substance.
I don't think I've seen any of these other than Wicked, because I've been struggling with money and I can't afford cinema tickets.
So if anybody wants to send any
please.
Money in for...
Or pirated copies.
You seen Dune Part 2?
Yeah, I saw Dune.
That's been nominated.
I'm not really massively into Dune. I think it's...
Yeah.
Just overstated.
It's one of those films that I thought I wasn't bored, and I thought the cinematography was really good.
Yeah, I think the cinematography was brilliant. The world was brilliant. I loved all the designs, but it just,
That wouldn't be in a Best Picture category for me.
No, no.
Anora's there. Yeah, The Substance obviously is. You want to see that, don't you?
I do really
want to
see that. Yeah.
I wouldn't. That wouldn't win it for me. No. Conclave. Again, that's one where I think the writing's really good. It's interesting. I haven't seen Emilia Perez yet, or Nickel Boys, or I'm Still Here. So there's still all the brutalists.
Thinking actually, Civil War wasn't nominated, was it?
I think that was last year, wasn't it?
So that's a 2024 film.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Oh, so it is. Yeah, it would be this award ceremony. You're
would
right,
it be
yeah.
this?
I would say that it was a really good film. I don't know whether I'd put it in the best picture category, but at the same time, I would put it in there above some of the ones that are in there.
Yeah, I'd put it above Wicked.
Yeah, I mean, Wicked was entertaining, but frustrating.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes as well. I thought that was a really fun film.
Yeah, I love those films.
Civil War would have been this year. It's not been nominated for anything. Okay. Same as Challengers.
Oh, that's a good point. Challengers has been nominated. It's not been nominated for anything, not even for writing.
Won a Golden Globe, was not nominated.
I will say, though, I really enjoyed that at the time, and I came out feeling like I just watched a good film after watching a slew of bad films. Mm. And somebody, in fact, there was a couple that were walking as we were coming out, and the woman said to her partner, "What the hell was that about?" Like, she was completely and utterly befuddled by it. I mean, isn't it all befuddling? I mean, I don't think it is. It's, I mean, you have to think about it, but I mean, it's just about a love triangle in the tennis world. Complex, but still. And I felt relieved to watch a good film after watching some bad films. But I have watched it again since, and I didn't think it was as good as I watched it the first time, but I still think it's a really good film. So the competition was Barry Lyndon, Dog Day Afternoon, Al Pacino, Jaws, yeah, and Nashville. So some real big classic films. When you look at the 70s Oscars lists and you see the Best Picture nominations, you're like, wow, the 70s was just such a great decade for film. At the BAFTAs, it lost out on writing, so it didn't win the Big Five. It lost out on writing to Bugsy Malone.
What is that? The gangsters wear their kids.
Yeah.
And throw pies at each other.
Yeah, which I think is entertaining. I really loved it. I actually acted in it as well when I was younger.
My little brother did Bugsy Malone as well.
I played Leroy the boxer.
I can't remember anything about it other than they throw pies instead of having.
Yeah, like, I can remember having very stung eyes at the end because the foam was just really irritating. So we've gone off track onto the world of awards. Is it?
Yeah, we have.
How can we bring it back?
Let's go to talking about one of the performances that won. Let's talk about.
Okay.
So Jack Nicholson won for his performance. And also, let's see his name, Brad Dourif won for his performance as supporting actor.
Nominated.
Nominated. He didn't win, did he? He was nominated.
But I think he did win at the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
And he won a Golden Globe for a new star of the...
Rising Star, whatever it is. So he played Billy, who had a stutter, didn't he?
So Jack Nicholson was incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, very easy to watch.
Yeah. First time I watched it, without a doubt, that was the performance that was for me. I was like, this is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the entertainment value and his ability to kind of hold the room. Mm-hmm. It's the moments when he's not saying anything, his reactions to things that I thought were really good. And I still think they're really good. But not subtle in the way that... his counterpart was.
And really three-dimensional as well for the character he's playing, where he is this lazy, doesn't want to work, how he's set out to be. He's someone that really cares, and you expect someone who's doesn't want to work, he just wants to get out of anything, he doesn't want to apply himself. But it's not that he doesn't want to apply himself, it's that just nothing called for him.
Does he really care, or is everything he does towards his own ends?
I think he cares, because there's no reason for him to break the people out with him when he goes fishing. He has no reason to take them all out on that.
Well, when he breaks out, he just jumps on the bus because they're all going out anyway, and he climbs over the fence, gets on the bus, and then steals them essentially.
Yeah,
I agree. I'm playing
a little bit
devil's advocate. Like, I do think he cares, and I think that that's most evident at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he starts to throttle Nurse Ratched and why he throttles her.
Yeah.
because he's genuinely...
Yeah, he's angered. She's not done her job.
She's not done her job, and a real tragedy has occurred. And I felt that when he was on the boat, he didn't need to show them how to fish.
No.
Even though that distracted them while he was off, you know, getting his end away. he didn't need to do that.
No.
And I was watching it thinking, if he could be rehabilitated, he'd be really good at that job.
Yeah, he needs to, like, run his own company that just comes along every now and then, takes someone days out.
Yeah,
he was great. And how he got them doing stuff they're not comfortable with, like driving the boat. He had, I can't remember the character's name, but the character that struggled to...
The nervy one.
Yeah, was really nervous. Had him going with the boat. He had Billy, who struggled with women. He had him talking to his sort of on and off girlfriend, I imagine. I can't remember what her name was. Is it Rosie?
Of course, that led to disaster. So
yeah.
Of which he had no awareness of. So he... Okay, so we may as well...
Yeah, let's talk about it. We'd all talk spoilers. It's an old film. If you've not seen it, go watch it.
Yeah. So there's a character in it who's very, very nervous and stuttery, has trouble with his mother, and he's obviously been in a relationship with a girl that his mother disagrees with.
Yes.
And he finds himself volunteering to be on this ward, presumably at the behest of his mother, who's friends with Nurse Ratched, as she says at the end.
Well, she says this a lot, but I felt like there's hints there that Nurse Ratched is actually his mother. That's what I got from it.
Okay.
I felt like it was very much, at least he's projecting his mother onto Nurse Ratched in the way that the stutter instantly comes back as soon. So basically, he presumably either loses his virginity or sleeps with another woman.
Jack Nicholson gets these girls to come round to break into the prison with a load of booze, bribes the guy, who the warden who's on that night, gets him drunk. In the end, he just gives up. He's like, I can't fight this. And then Billy, the kid with the stutter, ends up... Jack Nicholson realises that... Or McMurphy realises that he's attracted to this girl, and then he puts them together, and they end up having sex.
Yeah.
When he comes out the next morning after the sex, his stutter's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, stutter's gone, his confidence back.
Yeah.
And then he's firing on all cylinders, and then Ratched
comes in and goes, what would your mother say?
Yeah.
And that's the change.
Yeah, he's instantly turned into this scared little boy again with the stutter.
She tells him to go to his room. He goes to his room, and then McMurphy has got a chance to escape, but there's a sudden scream from one of the nurses who comes running in covered in blood, and McMurphy can't go. He has to see what's gone on. That was his chance. That's another thing that shows that he cares. McMurphy goes back to see what's happened, and the young boy, Billy, is slit his throat and he's lying dead on the floor. His immediate reaction to that is, this is what you did, which in a reactionary sense, that is what happened. His confidence was restored. She came back, took his confidence away. He took his life. McMurphy saw it as that, tried to kill her, gets it over the head, and she gets saved. And that's because he goes back, that's his demise, isn't it? Did you know what happened at the end with McMurphy? Did you know before you'd watched it?
No. I saw it sort of heading that way, but I didn't know that he would be basically electroshocked to the point of just being...
And he's lobotomized.
Oh, yeah, of course he's got the scars, hasn't he?
Yeah, so they've actually gone in and done brain surgery and he's not there anymore.
No. And a character we've not really spoke about, or Chief.
Yeah.
So he forms this really nice relationship. I think that's the moment where you see that he really does care, because it feels like at first, when he's trying to get him to play basketball, that's where it feels like it's for his own gain. He's just messing around with this person that doesn't understand. It feels almost a little bit like a bully dynamic at first. And then it progresses and you realise it's not this. He's genuinely trying to get this person who just stands in the corner silently stoic involved. And then one of my favourite scenes is later on the basketball scene where you have him playing and you see him like walking between it to defend and holding his hand up and then walking back. And then he starts skipping at another point, and it's like, it's really nice to see. And then he forms this like basketball team and they take some fishing. And then it's revealed after the incident with, I need to figure out his name because I don't know what his name actually is. The guy that...
With the glasses.
Who really struggles after he goes mental about his cigarettes. They get electroshock therapy, Murphy, and Chief, because he stands up for Murphy.
Yeah, Murphy ends up hitting one of the staff. Yeah. The staff jumps on Murphy, and then the Chief comes and saves McMurphy, doesn't he? Pulls him, and then all three of them get electric shock therapy. And while they're waiting outside, he gives the chief, he offers the chief a chewing gum.
Juicy fruit.
And the chief goes, thank you. Yeah. He's like, what
the fuck? Gives him another.
He spoke.
And he goes, juicy fruit.
Yeah, he goes, I like juicy fruit. Yeah. And he's like, you sly dog.
Yeah. And there's this forgery of like...
friends.
Yeah.
Like a relationship's developing, a bond, and possibly a way out, I guess. Yeah. But what actually happens is, because McMurphy doesn't escape, it is McMurphy, not Murphy, isn't it?
McMurphy, yeah.
Because he doesn't escape and he goes to see Billy, they manage to, and he tries to kill him, an earth fracture, and gets hit over the head. They have control of him. They take him into the operating theatre, lobotomise him. He comes back onto the ward, and then the chief has now decided that he's ready to leave and lets go. And he goes, I knew you wouldn't leave. And he's talking to him, and there's nothing there. And then he turns his head and he sees the scars where he's been lobotomised. And he can't leave him like that. Yeah. Somebody that presumably he's seen as so full of life. Yeah. When he himself was deadened inside, been brought back to life. And now he's been deadened. And so he kills him.
Yeah.
Because
it's a mercy.
A mercy killing, yeah. And then smashes the window open with some seed. It's quite seeded, quite nice, isn't it? That with it, because he breaks out the kind of sink unit that McMurphy tries to do at the beginning but can't do. Yeah. And he smashes it through the window and then escapes.
It was. I expected it to be the other way around and it'd be Chief that ended up like demising, standing up for himself. But I didn't expect McMurphy to almost martyr himself, I suppose. And then things just go back to how they were. All of the other sort of inmates as they're treated, I suppose. Go back to it. But the ones that are left behind are all there by their own accord. Yeah, they still feel trapped.
I was going to say, because I was going to save this for any other show business section, the book, the original book, which was a novel written by Ken Kesey, was told from the perspective of the chief.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's quite an interesting thing.
That is interesting.
And apparently he was really annoyed that the film wasn't told from his perspective. But I actually think that, like, it was quite wonderful, like, the way the transition happened, and that, you know, it was as a film, I don't know what his intentions were in the book, but as a film, and watching a film, it works really well.
Yeah.
The writing is really good, I think, for it to be written like that.
Definitely.
It was also originally a Broadway show before it was a film, and often when you see Broadway plays that have been made into films, they feel quite, you know, they're a film, they're staged. You like, I always think of Fences. Did you watch Fences? It was a few years ago.
I'm just thinking of Wicked. You know it because of the stage play.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the stage play, but I guess it's a musical and it's so full of colour and stagey in that sense. But Fences is like a drama, like this is a drama. And you feel the claustrophobia of the setting of a stage, even though it's set in New York, I think. Mm-hmm. And it never leaves the original conception of a stage play in my mind when I'm watching it. It always feels like a stage play. And sometimes it makes you wonder why make it a film, but it brings it to a bigger audience, I guess, and it's... and if the subject matter is important. Which for this, you know, is the subject matter's important. It's about reform, isn't it? I guess.
Yeah.
The hope is for reform. Ken Kesey had worked on wards. He'd seen this stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I've got experience on psychiatric wards, and I saw that stuff happening in the, like, noughties. Mm-hmm. Never mind, like, back in the 60s and 50s when presumably he was working there. You know, this, and today I work in... I work with people with autism, and a lot of them are medicated, and there's a fine line between medication and control.
Yeah.
There's a fine line between trying to actually support somebody to be able to manage themselves without medication or medicating them for an easy life.
Yes, there's a difference between the support and suppression of them.
And it still goes on. And it goes on because parents, or it goes on because... of staff. It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
And it's people.
I think that's why it is such a powerful scene when we see McMurphy yelling at them all that you're no madder than anyone else out there. You're all normal. Like, that's a nice scene. And I think it's interesting that it doesn't really lean into the fact that he's pretending to have a mental illness to be kept there. And I don't really know if we're meant to see him as this sane man, or we are meant to see him as a bit mentally challenged. Like, it never really plays with that. I think that's interesting. He's just this fly on the wall, I suppose, that's sort of dragged into it.
Should we popcorn score it? Because I think we're...
let's popcorn score it, and then we'll give some trivia.
Okay.
Popcorn score... I'd say 5 out of 10. 5 out of 5.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Shit.
I'd say 10 out of 5.
Damn it. Yeah, I'd say 5 out of 5 for this one.
Okay. 5 sweet popcorn.
5 sweet.
I'm in that situation again where I feel like it's like a 9, but at the same time, I don't think I can give it a 4 because I think it is still 5.
Yeah.
But I say the reason I say that I think it's still 5 is because I was aware of, like, the dating of it, that it did look older at times.
Yeah.
Some of the scenes, like, when they were on the boat, the filming, as much as anything, seemed a bit...
Because of the use of locations and things.
Yeah.
It's that'd be a bit awkward on a boat.
I felt like all of the performances were solid. I felt like the direction was amazing for that reason, maybe. And I thought the writing was really good. I think the subject matter is massively important. I think it's still hard hitting today. Even talking about this, I found that I've got goose pimples. So I can't not give it a 5.
Yeah.
So that's
10 out of 10.
That's our first 10 out of 10.
It sweeped the awards again.
Yeah.
Now it can have, when it's re-released, it can have on the poster, so, film apart, 10 out of 10.
So 50 years later, it's been 50 years.
50 years.
Since the film. So it's the 50th anniversary year, actually, thinking about it.
So when they do re-release it this year, whack on the poster, films apart, 10 out of 10, 10 popcorn, 10. Sweet and salty score.
Sweet and salty popcorn. And then get yourself to the cinemas where they're re-showing it.
Yeah.
Buy yourself a sweet and salty popcorn.
Yeah.
And enjoy the film.
Yeah, think of us throughout.
Think of us, Or don't buy it. Think of what you could do with that money. Send it our way and buy us a coffee.
Buy us a coffee.
I feel like I'm begging a lot lately on these podcasts.
Yeah, we've got to.
We've not got any way of trying to get money off people anyway, have we? So I don't really know what we're begging for. It's like...
Just sympathy.
Yeah.
That's all.
Just sympathy.
Yeah.
Send us love.
Pray for us.
Yeah.
Any other show business?
Yeah.
Let's jump into any other show business.
Okay.
So, Billy Bibbit. With his stutter.
Yeah, it's a good name for a stutter.
It is. I don't know if we're allowed to do this.
No, actually,
Played by Billy Bibbit, played by Brad Dourif, voiced Chucky.
Oh.
Yeah, famous horror slasher character Chucky.
Classic horror.
Classic. It's a fun one. It's one that I've not seen other than the first. I've not seen any of the others.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah. And interestingly, we can link this back to Tiptoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've been thinking that. I wonder if we can link every film in some way back to Tiptoes, our very first podcast.
With the 6 degrees of separation theory. Yeah. And we can in 2 degrees of separation. So we have Brad Dourif, played Billy Bibbit, also played Chucky, who the stunt, not really a double because it's a doll, but the stuntman for was
the actor in the suit.
Actor, yeah. Ed Gale from Tiptoes. He played Gary Oldman and Michael McConaughey's, Matthew McConaughey's uncle.
Yeah.
So there we go. It all comes back to Tiptoes.
It all comes back to Tiptoes. And if you don't know what we're on about when we talk about Tiptoes, that's because you obviously haven't listened to our very first episode.
Go listen to the pilot.
Tune in.
Tune in. It's one of our best.
It's gone downhill from there.
Yeah, we've only got worse. I think it was a very good film. Entertaining, hard-hitting, good performances all round.
If you can marry tragedy with drama in that, tragedy with comedy in that way, sorry, then, you know, you've done something.
Yeah, definitely. Very Shakespearean in that sort of sense.
It was entertaining and moving.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's it. It's great. We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Cheers for watching, guys.
Peace.
And girls.